Welcome back, comedy fans, to an all-new Comedy at the Carlson Cast. Get more information and subscribe at carlsoncast.com. Joining us on the line today, it's Earl David Reed, everybody. We're very excited. Today's episode is, of course, brought to you by Sapori Cafe and Catering, Rochester's favorite spot for lunch and any of your catering needs. Find them on Facebook and Instagram at Sapori Rochester. Also, Three Heads Brewing are the makers of Rochester's favorite beer. Remember, do good things and always be kind. And now here's your very healthy host. He eats COVID-19 for breakfast along with six bowls of booberry. It's Mr. Vinny Paulino.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another fantastic on-the-line edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. We're excited. We're going to be talking to Earl David Reed in just a minute or two. But before we get to that, we want to remind you, we're going to be live streaming some cool stuff this weekend. Coming up this weekend from the Carlson Comedy Network, we're presenting an awesome live concert with our friends at Analog. They're going to be playing in the Wrinkles Room, obviously following all of those social distancing precautions. They're going to be live and streaming Sunday, 4/26 at 7 p.m. on Facebook Live. So make sure you put that on your calendars and keep an eye out right here. And ladies and gentlemen, let me welcome to the show our guest today, Earl David Reed. Hey, Earl.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. Brian's here too, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm here.
Brian. Hey, Brian, how's it going?
Good to
First
see
of
you.
All, I got to tell you guys, man. You've grown this show so much. The show is fantastic. I catch it when I can catch it. Always have great guests. You do a really good job, Vinny. I saw you doing stand up. I believe I saw you actually doing your own show in the Rickles Room one night. Weren't you able to do that? Did they put you in there, right?
Yeah, you know,
I love playing the club.
I'll play the Rickles anytime, any place. That's my absolute favorite room in the world.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, I got to tell you, Comedy at the Carlson is like I was telling the guys off air, I don't get to do too many comedy clubs anymore. I do like small theaters and stuff, but you have to come out and see this place. This place is amazing. Could be, and I'm not just saying this because it's your show, could be the best comedy club in all of America, and that's true. Because most of them have gone into the wayside. Mark has gone in a different direction and stepped up while everyone else is stepping down. This is a great place to go. Unbelievable.
You know, Vinny, I'm thinking we should have Earl on the show more often.
I think, hey, Earl, I need a new
co-host. He just makes us feel great.
Well, I got to tell you this right now. Listen, much to most people's surprise, I just learned how to do this whole Skype thing today. Folks, I'm a dinosaur.
You're
so that would be really good. I discover stuff after people discover it, you know. I took a picture of my check and deposited it the other day, and I was like, hey, you know, you can take a picture of your check and deposit it. And they're like, yeah, you've been able to do that for the past, I don't know, 8 years or so.
Yeah, but that still feels like the future every time I do that.
I love it.
That's the one thing in my life that every time I do it, I'm like, this is amazing. I can't believe this exists.
So, let me ask you. I was really surprised that when you called me up and everything, because I'll be there in July, I believe the 16th, 17th, 18th of July.
Correct.
If the planet is still here, I will be there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know about it. I don't want to get into all this COVID stuff because everybody's probably memed it, joked it, and all this other kind of stuff to death. But I will tell you this. A comedy club, I got a letter from a comedy club that I don't even play, but I guess I was on this mailing list. And they said, the woman says, she goes, listen, eventually we're going to come back out of this. But when you come back out of here and you're booked here at this club, please do not cover my stage with COVID-19 jokes. It's all played out. Do the act. The reason why that brought you here is because of your act in the past. Do your act. Don't have 90% of your act be about COVID-19, because now even people are getting burned out about talking about it and even making fun of it to the certain degree that you can make fun. So,
yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be cliche by the time things open up. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Oh, and by the way, if you have a local band and you start a band and you call it social distancing, I'm going to come up on stage and punch you in the face. That's it, man. No, just stop it. Those are two words that should be taken out of the English language, social and distancing. No, don't. That's not your band. It's not hip. It's not cool. Stop it right now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna it's social, hack, if nothing else.
I will socially distance myself away from your music.
I like the people that go, well,
No, okay.
I don't know about social distancing. I've been doing that my whole life, you know, as if you're so cool that you have to keep people away from you. Forget it. You're done.
Hey, you know, the last time I saw you, I was telling Brian this yesterday. The last time I saw you, Earl, in person, you looked like you were going to murder somebody. Do you remember why?
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Oh, the guy with the time. Was it a guy doing time on stage?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, listen, I got to rehash the story because I got to be honest. I need you to know a few things that you didn't know. And you're going to enjoy this. So here's what happened. Earl was headlining in the main room, in the Kevin Meaney showroom at the club. I was running New Comic Night in the Rickles room. Now, New Comic Night's one of those things that we do here at the club every now and again to help some new talent, you know, get established and let Mark, our management, see who's out there and doing good so we can book some new features and MC.
A slightly more controlled open mic.
Exactly correct. So we did this one guy who watches our show religiously, and I guarantee you he's probably watching this, which is why I wanted to bring it up to you. This guy, he's a little wacky, he's a little different. He had answered a trivia question and won a pair of tickets to go see you. So he came to New Comic Night and then came up to me in the middle of New Comic Night and said, "Is it all right if I use my tickets to go watch the rest of Earl's show?" And I'm thinking, oh, this is a guy who loves comedy. He just wants to go see a great comic in the main room. All right, man, go ahead. And I walked him in. I walked him past the door. Guy, I said, "Hey, man, go grab a seat, whatever." What happened, Earl, after I left?
Oh, that guy tried to heckle. I end up ripping him apart. And I'm going, you know, it's like, first of all, no one's there to see you. I'm lucky if they're there to see me. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're definitely not there to see you. And I remember ripping that guy apart and he left and I said to Vinny, he goes, "Oh, that guy won free tickets." I go, "Wait, he has no concept of what he was doing. He just went on in the other room and then came on in here to figure that he was going to be part of it." So he had no concept of how it went, which is just ridiculous. But that guy was, I don't know where that guy is today. And, I'm sure I'll run into him again at some point.
And I assume he sat there giggling like an idiot the whole time that you were yelling.
I don't know whether he was laughing or not. I just know he wasn't winning, okay? And yeah. It's like, you know, it's like stop, you know? It's like, see, remember in the original Rocky movie when right towards the end, Apollo Creed hits Rocky and he's down? And he's down there, and Adrian's looking out the sidewalk, and you hear Mickey going, "Stay down, stay down, stay down," yeah. You know? But Rocky got back up, and he gave the best fight of his life.
That
it was just
him.
Like that, except he didn't give the best fight of his life after he got back up. He should have stayed down.
Right. You know? He needed a corner man.
Yeah, it was amazing. But there, see, I thought you were talking about another story that happened to me. There was a guy that came in, and I guess he had done open mics a couple of times, and he was supposed to do a guest set, and they said, "Well, you have to ask the headliner if it's okay to do a guest set." And he came up to me and he's like, he says, "Hey, is it all right to do a guest set?" And I was messing around with him because he was kind of cocky, and he came up to, and I heard him over there, and I was like, "No, I'm like, I don't think you should be able to do this. Who the fuck you think you are to just come in here? I work my ass to be able to be here, and I want to get on a certain time." And I just laid into him and walked out the door. And I can't remember who it was. I think it was Greg Owens.
Yep.
And I can't remember who the other person was. And I walked out the door and just stood out there for just 3 minutes, which could have been the longest 3 minutes of this guy's life. So, and then I walked back in right before he's going to go on. And I said, "I was just kidding, man, you know." And so he went up there and nervously went through his act, but I was just messing with him. I thought you were talking about that guy. I forgot all about the guy with the free tickets and
stuff
like
that. You're just making friends all over Rochester, Earl.
Well, you know, I love Rochester, man. And I'll tell you, in a weird way, and I'm sure I'll get flack for where I'm at now, but in a perfect world, if I had been a little smarter, I probably would still be there to this day. And no disrespect to what I'm doing now. But, you know, working with Weez, you can't beat that as far as radio is concerned. But it's just turned into a very huge, respected comedy community. It's just amazing. And Mark with that club, he's just out of his mind. Yeah. He's just out of his mind with it. So that's cool.
You know, you got me onto an interesting subject because we love talking about comedy in general. What do you think should be the rules that people should remember? If you're a new performer, say you're an open mic guy and you're getting a guest spot, this is an interesting field of thought. What are the rules, do you think? What do you think people should know before they go into the green room?
Well, it's really weird, too. I mean, I don't know. It's like, first of all, it's hard to have rules in a business that doesn't have any rules in itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can wake up tomorrow and that guy could be, I don't know, his big star in a series.
You're right.
And
comedy does have a lot of unspoken rules. There's not like any type of real like 10 commandments of stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right there. So keep going. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay. No, but here's the deal with that. I think it's a little different. I would put this rule to just about anything. Let's say I'm a new mechanic and I walk into a room with a bunch of other mechanics that are really good. Okay, I'm going to keep quiet and try to learn something. Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's not like the movies. You can't come in there. You're not Maverick. You're not going to come in there and be a hotshot. You're not anything that you ever thought. You're not that cop that can't be kept under control in all the cop movies. You know, you just sit there and you have to learn something. And the problem is,
you've been watching a lot of 80s movies?
Oh, please.
You're making a lot of 80s movies references. I'm just
listen, I'm telling you.
He's
what you talking about there?
Shit.
What you talking about?
Diplomatic immunity.
It's like, oh, yes. Wait, don't tell me. Don't tell me. Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes, 2.
That's right. it's weird, too, because I think that's what it – here's the problem. There are a lot of comedians. We have an open mic night down here, okay? And on open mic night – they have about 35, 40 comedians.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if I had my way, I'd be like, well, listen, I'd be the guy that runs it. If I'm the guy that's running it, I show up, I watch these guys, and I go, hey, you know what? You're good, but maybe you need to take a little time off to write more. You know, no one's sitting through 30 performers. And then you get to a point where you're sitting there and you're messing with each other. Some people are actually, just because you want to go on stage doesn't mean you're ready to be on stage.
Right.
You know? And that's where people don't know the difference. You know, you can't tell anybody they're not funny. You cannot tell them. People, if you told somebody, they fight you in the street. That is the thing that everyone wants to be. Everyone wants to be known, even if they don't. They want to be known as having a sense of humor. You can't tell. You can talk about someone's mother. They won't be as upset as if you tell them, hey, you know, you're not funny.
Watch
you know,
this.
They'll fight the street.
Brian, you're not funny. Brian.
And look, funny's relative. What the hell do I know? Okay. What I'm just saying is maybe that it needs to be controlled a little bit more. I mean, open mic's nice and people get to go and say, but no one's going to sit through. You can barely get people, your buddy with the gave the tickets to prove that. You can't get people to sit through two, three
buddy,
comedians.
No. Buddy,
you know?
No. Not buddy.
No.
You know? You could, you can't get people to sit through three patiently. 30?
Yeah.
See, comedy's a lot like eating pancakes. Okay, you go to get your pancakes, you go, hey man, you know what, I can't wait to get some pancakes. After the third pancake, maybe fourth pancake, you're going, I don't even want to see another pancake as much as I love them. I'll come back another time and eat more pancakes. So it's like that. You can't sit there and put like 30 people up on a stage and stuff. So there are no rules, but I think you should at least respect the other performer that's up there. You know.
So you're doing radio down in Lewisburg, right?
Actually, down in Harrisburg, down
Harrisburg.
Here. I live in, Lewisburg is where Bucknell is. I live in Lewisberry, which is in York County, between Harrisburg and York.
Oh,
so we have the radio station here. We're broadcasting from our homes and everything else like that, which is a little different because I get up and just go down the hall. There's no commute. You don't even have to get dressed if you don't want to, you know. You know, as you see, you don't have to shave. I got a beard going. I have never tried to grow a beard, never attempted to have a beard, but this one just kind of fell into place because I just got lazy, which most of us probably have at this point.
Well,
so
it's looking all right for your first time.
I'm taking it off as soon as I get back to the barbershop. I don't even trust myself to shave myself. That's how much of a diva I've become.
When it gets that long, it's hard to. Like, I get scared myself.
You know, I went from like, it started off like, oh, you know, maybe just a little, you know, a little coverage and everything. Then I started cruising into like Danny Glover, you know, and then I kind of went into like Whitman Mayo, like Grady from the Sanford and Son sort of thing happening here. There's an 80s reference for you.
Yeah, you don't 70. Want that. You no, don't want yeah. that headline of Earl David Reed accidentally removes lip.
Well, and you know what it is too. It's now it's like I see all the promo stuff and publicity stuff. You know, I got to shave it anyway, unless I want to go through a whole other shoot sort of thing. But you know, and that and my eyesight's gone. I'm morphing perfectly into an old guy. I got all the problems. Just that everyone.
It's liberating, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
I feel like it's kind of nice. Once you're past 40, you're allowed to just be like, I don't care, and they're like, oh, okay. People accept it. People accept
they
it.
Go,
just don't
oh,
care.
He's just, just older. He doesn't care. I went to the store the other day. I had pajama bottoms on that are like plaid, and I didn't even care. I just walked through there like everything else, and, you know, it was just really weird. I've just gone through some other things. I've had I'm recovering from I've recovered more almost completely from heart failure that I had back in July.
I was just about to ask you about that. That happened last summer, at the middle of last summer. And, you told me you didn't know that it was happening, that you were suffering from heart failure. You didn't know anything was starting to be wrong.
I had no symptoms. This started wake you up, guys and gals. I had no symptoms at all. I didn't have the shortness of breath or the pain or just none of that stuff. And the matter of fact, the doctor's like, you know, you've probably been in AFib for like about 3 weeks. And I was in Vegas and I was getting up early in Vegas, going to run. You've been to Vegas, like out towards the outlets, where out like the desert sort of way, jogging and it's stuff like that too. Yeah, never knew anything, nothing. And then when I got back, I went to the doctor and I said, when I laid down to sleep, I was like, well, I could hardly had a little shortness of breath sort of thing, but it was fluid building up. But I didn't know. I thought I might have had the flu or something. I go to the doctor. He runs an EKG. He goes, let me run it again. Runs it a second time. He goes. Your heart's in AFib. I need to get you to the hospital. So they got me to the hospital, and then they looked at me for 5 minutes. They said, this will take about an hour for stress test. 7 minutes later, they come in. They go, nope, we're rushing you to emergency. Your heart's failing. So I was like, holy cow. So it happened, and everything kind of flashed before me, and I just started thinking about what was in order and what wasn't in order and all this other kind of stuff. And you know, it was just a weird experience. It's like, you know, just opened up my eyes to realize that, you know, sometimes you got to stop down and take care of yourself, especially if you don't. I mean, I didn't know.
Not for nothing.
But I was the best I could. Yeah.
You're an amazing. You're one of the guys I know that's like in amazing shape. Like you.
Well,
really
that's
are.
The
like,
thing too.
As far as I can tell, you've always taken care of yourself. I mean, you don't look like me.
Well, no. Well, listen, I've been using that time. Now this downtime, which a lot of people, but training and stuff like that, because I might even compete again, and I thought I was doing the right thing, but it was nothing that I could. There's nothing that I could have done to prevent that. Sometimes it just happens. You could be in the best shape in the world, if your heart's not functioning right, you know, it's just not functioning right. And I actually had to go in, and I went out. They ran I had the AFib, so they did heart catheter, ran that up through my groin and stuff into the heart, which is a long way to get there.
Not the most direct route.
No. I was like, we're going to go to your heart. I was like, all right, and open up my mouth, you know, because I figured that was the way they were going. But nope, and they had to shave me down, and I looked like Mr. T from the waist down. with an extremely large nose. I had to say that.
With the chains and everything?
Oh, man, let me say it was weird, too, because it was a funky experience. And I was like, okay, I look back at it now and I go, you know, what happened to me? How did that all happen? Where did it go? I was in the hospital for like about 9 days, you know.
My dad had it, and it's the same thing. It was just out of nowhere. He just had a little bit of shortness of breath one day, and they said, you've had this forever.
And they were like,
in there for about a week.
How old's your dad?
He's passed away now, but he was about 63 probably at the time.
See, and that's the funky thing about it. When I was on the sixth floor in here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Lancaster General, they were like, we don't really see people around your age around here. So that's why they were more concerned on how it got to be that way. And
you should have grown the beard.
Well, I'm on every medicine known to man. All my medicines have like black, could be black rapper names, you know, like Entresto and Eloquist, you know. You sound like really good black rapper. Ladies and gentlemen, Eloquist. Did you see the BET Awards? I was watching Eloquist, and man, when Entresto came out, oh my goodness.
Man, my dog's got Eloquist right now.
Oh man, it's just so they it's just you know, that and Crestor and all these other ones, you know, it's like, you know, If the rap thing's a little too hard for you and the white people, just say it sounds a lot like superheroes. I know y'all love
He-Man
them.
Characters, I yeah. was going to say.
But it's an ongoing thing. I have to, every day, I have to just take all that stuff and be a part of it, though.
Now, like, how long was the recovery for this? When would you say you started feeling yourself again after something like that?
Here's the thing, guys. I never really felt bad.
Right.
But anything else after this, the whole thing about it was, more physical, it was mental. It was totally mental. It was like, oh, my goodness. Because you think about something. You probably own maybe, let's say, 4 or 5, maybe even more cars in your life. And there's some cars you had that you hadn't got rid of, and some cars you might have just run into the ground, you know? And that whole time you had all those cars, this is what my mind was thinking. And that whole time, I've had the same heart. And it's done the same thing every day, nonstop. Even with your car, you stop, you can put it in the garage, you go in the house. But my heart kept doing the same thing every single day. And then that made me kind of crazy. So I had to talk to somebody about that, because they were like, you know, the mental part of that, when you come that close, is more difficult than anything else. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm sitting here thinking about. I'm like, when you hear that kind of news and you've had no symptoms, I'm not trying to scare you here, but now you're going to have to go through the rest of your life going, I'm not having any symptoms. I hope everything's okay.
Yeah, I mean, always check,
and that's the hard part
my heart
about
rate all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I have a heart monitor thing that I carry with me all the time, and it has a reminder on me when to check things, and it tell me if I'm going into AFib, and you know, and it's just, you know, it's weird. I mean, when you start to go and you get to be a certain age, and then everything starts going past you, you know, hey, I remember that guy from high school. Well, he's passed on or whatever, and all this kind of stuff. It's funky. And that's where the mental part of this whole business with the stand-up gets, because you still have to be that guy, you know. No one wants to come out and have you tell your horror stories unless you can do it in a humorous way and maybe have a slight message for it at the end of it. So,
right. And I mean, that kind of story doesn't necessarily, it'll win an audience over, but it's not exactly the funniest thing in the world either, you know?
No. As a matter of fact, when I mention it, the people are kind of like, oh, you know, because I remember when they first released me from the hospital, 3 days later, I was down in Tampa, performing in Tampa. And I said, you know, I just got out of the hospital.
3 days?
Yeah, like 3 days from it. And I was like, I just got out of the hospital. Well, actually, no, my bad. It wasn't 3 days. It was probably a week, because I got out that Friday, and then I had to be in Tampa the Friday afterwards. So, you know, so I was slightly concerned, but the club owner was like, you know, the guy that ran the venue was like, well, you know, my wife's a nurse, and I'll have her come to the show, and that sort of thing. And that kind of scared me, too. I was like, listen, if I felt like I wasn't going to, couldn't be here, I probably wouldn't be here. The whole nurse thing kind of freaked me out, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that is a sobering story.
Man, I'll tell you, it's been a heck of a year. This is all pre-virus. So dig this. The week I'm in Vegas, I'll tell you this story. The week I'm in Vegas, okay, I'm performing. You know, my dad was killed in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, used to go down to the wall, etch the names off of the wall. You know, the Vietnam Wall. Now they have something virtual on it. And what happens is, if you want the name etched, you go on there, put the name in. There's a veteran society. They etch it, and then they'll send it to you by mail. But also, if you go online, when you look up the name of the person you're looking for, like with my dad, it tells them, you know, well, was rank, everything he did, all the medals he won and everything. And you can leave a message there and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. My dad was a staff sergeant in the Marines, and we were talking the 60s, so he had like all the black guys in there and all the crazy white guys in his platoon. It would almost seem like it was a movie. They were going to a rice paddy, and he had a point guy and a guy to his right. They were ambushed in a rice paddy, and they made their way out of the rice paddy, and all the shooting started. My dad grabbed the guy in front of him, the guy to his right, and just kind of made his way out. Dropped one of the guys. My dad was shot. Dropped one of the guys. Got the other guy back. Went and grabbed the other guy and was shot on the way back and was killed. A small firearm is what it says from it. So when I left the message on my dad's wall, because you could leave messages for people, I was like, hey, you know, never really got to know, because I was 6 years old. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure how I turned out, or I'm not sure what kind of person I am, but I hope whatever kind of person I am, you know, you're proud of me, this sort of thing. So when I'm in Vegas the week before, you know, I'm talking like a Star Wars thing. I gave you the one story. Now I'm going back behind the other story, you know.
How storytelling is done. It's fine.
So I'm up there and I'm performing, and I always do this thing going, hey, man, shout out to the people in the military. Hey, you know, like that. And I was feeling good. And I was just killing. I was working with this comedian named Basil, who's an extremely funny guy. And I was like, oh, you know, military people, raise your hand. And I said, oh, just stand up. So all these people are standing up. And you know, you get out of that and they all start to sit down. And there's one guy that's still standing, and he goes, Mr. Reed. And I said, yeah. He goes, yes. He goes, I'm a Robert Torter of the United States Marine Corps. And I've been looking for you for 53 years, he says. He goes, your father, I'm one of the guys your father saved out of that rice paddy that day. So wow. Now the crowd is dead silent, just quiet. And I'm standing there with my mouth open.
You start
open.
Doing crowd work on him? Like, hey, nice shirt.
I didn't know what to do, and I was like, and I can't even remember. I did something that got it out of it, out of the spot that got a really big applause. I can't remember what it was, but at that moment, I just climbed down off the stage, and I went and I gave the guy a hug, mm-hmm. And so I ended up having lunch with him the next day. Mm-hmm. But the second show that night was interesting because the guy that ran the casino came up to me. And he says, hey, are you former military? And I said, he didn't see the first show. I said, no. He says, I just asked that because when you talk like this. You see my hand here? He goes, you talk like this, which in the military is called a knife hand. And all the staff sergeants used to use a knife hand. So then I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I have a trait from my father that
you
I didn't really
know.
Yeah. So that kind of creeped me out. And I remember going to lunch to him the next day, and he said to me, that was something funny. He goes, you know, I got to tell you something about your father. I'll tell you things here and there. And we have established a racial relationship. He lives in Montana.
Okay.
And I Big Sky. I was actually performing in Big Sky in February. So he came out to the show. He has like 140 acres or something. He went into some kind of business afterwards. And started doing that. But we're having lunch, and he looked at me and he goes, I got to tell you something about your father. And I'm going, oh, man, I don't know what I'm ready to hear. And he says, your father had no sense of humor at all. He goes, he never laughed. He never smiled. He says, I've gotten trouble trying to make him smile. And he was one of the strictest, meanest, in a nice way, meanest people that I've ever met. And he said, if he could see you today, he would probably be really proud. So I thought that was cool. And you would think that would be the story and the credits would come rolling by. I go to Montana to perform. I get up there and I'm performing. He goes, okay, we're going to go snowshoeing on his property. He's got all his property snowshoeing. So go snowshoeing. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever done that before. I know.
No,
Rochester.
Do I look like a snowshoer? No. I fall in the driveway in the middle of winter trying to get to my car.
Well, here's the hard part about it. You don't realize the importance of the snowshoe until the snowshoe comes off.
Yes.
Because you're walking, you go, okay, whatever. But it walks on top of the snow. So when my snowshoe came off, it went almost up to my waist on one side because the snow was that deep. So we're walking through there, and he's got his wife there and his dog, and I got my girl Tina with me, and we're just going. And we're walking through these trails and stuff, and he's leading the way, and he stops in the middle of a trail, and he looks and he turns around and he says to me, he goes, all these years later, and I'm leading another Reed through the woods. And I was like, holy cow, that was just heavy. So yeah. Today it's the most craziest thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And you know, after the heart attack or the heart failure, I thought to myself, I was like, oh, that's the craziest thing that ever happened to me. And somewhere in this world, there's a higher being that went, you ain't seen shit yet. Watch what I dropped in the now. And then I was like, holy cow. So we still go back and forth. And in the summer, when everything messes up, I'm supposed to go up there and hike and hang out for a week or so. But it's like, you know, you can go your whole life and I'm going, okay, this is whatever, whatever. And then when you get to not the end of it, but to the latter part of it and go, holy crap, this is really really weird. So that's just been stuck in my head for the
whole
time, too.
That's a beautiful story, though. Thank you for sharing that with us. That really is.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And really and is. I have respect for the military, you know, and that stuff. But that stuff people should have anyway before we got into all the flag waving and stuff. You know, that's, yeah. You know, and be, oh, thank you for your service. That should have been going on forever. It right. shouldn't become a popular thing. It's hard for me to even say now because it sounds almost like, oh, God bless you, you know, or how you doing, you know, where it's just something that you say to people. So we'll see. That'll probably get me in trouble.
Probably not. I know you've had a kind of a busy day, but before I let you go, how's your dog doing?
Dogs are going great. Gabe is a championship dock diver. He's world ranked. He's ranked like number 4 in the world. He weighs about 82 pounds, which is almost an impossibility that he can jump that high.
That's a big
but,
dog.
He's a boxer bull mastiff mix. Wow. And he's got a lot of skills. He's
a lot of dog.
Oh, yes, a lot of dog. And he's been winning. And it's funny, I'm down here now, like I said, in my family room before. Upstairs, if we were in my office, all my stuff has been taken down. And he's got all these medals and stuff and that are up there. He's a very – this is how important my dog is. I take him outside. I shit in the yard. That's how important he is. And it's just really – I'm at the point now where, he's at a rescue. I would recommend people rescue a dog. Just rescue it.
Don't shop, people.
That's it, man. You know, it's just amazing. But you, by the way, before we have to do our thing, I noticed you headlined that room. That's good for you, Comedy Wise, Vinny. And that's great because I remember you've been doing it for a while, but I don't know how long you've been doing it for. But to be able to headline a room is good.
Seriously, I started around 2009. The first time I got on stage was 2001. And I didn't do it very much. I had a weird situation. My dad died around 2003, and I just completely quit everything for like 5-6 years. I just kind of stopped doing everything that I wanted to do, kind of put me into a weird arrested development kind of
state. I hear you. I know what you're saying.
When I came out of it, man, I went straight for comedy because it got me out of that dark hole, man.
It's amazing. It's unbelievable. And here's the other thing, too. I know you love your wrestling and stuff.
Yeah, I
so they canceled WrestleMania. Did you still watch WrestleMania?
Parts.
I watched it.
I'm
I watched
a WWE
it all, yeah.
guy. I'm an AEW fella. I love AEW.
Geez. Brian, are you a wrestling dude, too?
Yeah, I watched it all. It was good and bad. It's weird, but I don't watch, like, Raw and SmackDown when there's no crowd because
that's hard
not
to
the same.
Because it's well, first of all, a good 60% of that is audience a reaction.
Yeah.
So the guy comes out and he starts jawing to nobody. That just looks
the most awkward is when they forget and they're just on autopilot and they still stand up on the ring post and stick their arms out to no one.
To no one. You know,
it's like, oh my God.
A couple of sound guys are just going.
Yeah.
And you know what else? One of the better experiences I like. Was when the night I was there and Luke Harper was there.
Yeah.
Came out to the show that night and I got pictures with him and he liked the show. That was pretty good. And I know if you're watching this podcast today and it's like, well, this is us kind of just sit here shooting the shit. July, I'll be in Rochester, New York at the Carlson and you need to come out and check out the show. It's going to be a whole lot of fun, man. And they'll tell you, man, sold out shows and standing O's. That's what it's about. It's about entertaining people.
Yeah.
You are going to want it now. You're going to be dying to get out of your house. Those people that you thought you were in love with, you're not in love with them anymore. Or you never really loved them. You found that shit out, too. So it's just amazing.
Your eyes open when you go to see EDR.
I'm telling you, we're going to have the best time.
It's like
divorce lawyers are going to be buying new houses.
I tell you, let me tell you something right now.
Every divorce lawyer is just like, oh, this is awesome.
Are you both married? You both married guys?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Not to each other.
Okay, I know. But, I don't know.
Anything wrong with that?
I would
to each other. Just clarified.
I would have to believe. You don't even have to tell me, but in the recesses of your mind, there's something that your other has done that you go, "Shit, I didn't know she did that, man. I'm glad that I don't have to watch her do that every day," sort of thing, you know. So it's everyone has that. It just comes with the gig, you know.
Yeah.
Like breathing or something like that, you know. Who knows? Whatever it might be, but.
Yeah.
We are going to have a good time in Rochester. I love that place. I like July because I know it's not gonna snow. Which, by the way, you guys are always prepared for, so I'm not even worried about that. So
we got some last night.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, there's snow on the ground this morning.
Like an inch last night almost. Yeah.
How much snow?
What,
how much?
Well, almost an inch last night, I think we got.
Jeez.
The answer is like enough to annoy me. Just,
you're not a big winter guy, neither one of you? You're in the place for that, but you know.
I'm ambivalent, really. I don't mind the winter that.
Well, I will be up there. Have you seen Wheeze? Have you talked to Wheeze or anything like that?
You know, I texted him last week, and Wheeze just didn't respond, man.
Uh-oh. Is he mad at you or something?
I don't think so.
Everybody's a little mad at Vinny. I don't know anyone who's not just a little bit mad at you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I have that way about me. You know, Billy DeTore, you know Billy DeTore, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Billy.
No, I know what happened with his gig. He lost his gig, yeah.
Yeah, he works with us now. He's on the Carlson cast.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's on our pirate ship with us now.
Yeah, I've always liked Billy, and it's funny with the whole radio thing when everything got funky, they started just that company started getting rid of people and stuff. Knock on wood, we've been on our show for about 16 years. And, and I'm always thinking about, not if but when, whether it's me or somebody else makes that decision. But Billy's a good guy. And he's a smart dude. And when I saw that, I felt bad because, he's a guy that's put a lot of time and a lot of effort in there,
Yeah.
We
love
him. Yeah, the whole town was pretty much in an uproar about that. So,
I mean, I don't know any other radio that's up there. Wheeze is the guy, and Wheeze has always been good to me.
And that's the thing. Like, it's such a weird radio market. It's one of the still profitable radio markets from everything that I've read. Rochester's still profitable, which I don't understand. And Wheeze is a big part of that, so.
Yeah, I like that he gets to, he broadcasted from Florida. That's.
Yeah, he figured all this stuff out we're doing like 2 years ago, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. That works out fine.
Well, in a couple of weeks when this thing is still going on and we're all still locked up, we're going to call you and have you back on, Earl.
Well, listen, we'll have more fun next time. I'm just connected in and to let you know, not that I didn't have fun now. This is awesome. I love you guys, and I got to tell you, you do a great job. You do a great job with this. And wish you lots of success. When you see stuff like this that you're doing, there's a lot of podcasts out there and everything. You know, it's there's a sea of them.
Yeah.
So that's why you need to watch this one. This one's very good. They'll always have the talent come in and be able to chat with them and stuff like that too. So it's all good.
We'll have you back just to make ourselves feel better. In a couple of weeks when we're getting really down the dumps, we're like, let's call Earl. He'll make us happy.
But out there in July, we're going to have some good
tell us we're pretty.
We're going to have some food. I want to jump on stage in that Rickles room because that's like my idol. He's like my, as a matter of fact, on the other side of this room, I got an autographed picture from Don Rickles. He, this is amazing. I went to see him in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. When I was performing in one of the things on my resume, is it even on this poster here? Now, one thing on my resume is they came out when I did a review of me when I was in Vegas one night, and they called me an urban style Don Rickles. So I said, wow, that's pretty good, I guess.
That's high praise.
It's high praise for them even going that route. So I will never forget it. I was playing the Riviera, which is no longer there anymore. That's how old I am. I can tell you hotels that aren't there anymore. So I was there at Riviera performing there, and it was a Saturday night show, and the guy says to me, hey, listen, the guy that runs the place, who, by the way, the guy that used to run the comedy club at the Riviera was Steve Sciarippa, the guy from
Sopranos.
Sopranos.
Hmm. He ran a comedy club?
I had
no idea.
It was like a casino, but in any case, he said, hey, come back. Go back after the show. And there's Don Rickles sitting there reading the paper. But he sees me come in, but he acts like he's reading the paper. And he's acting like he's reading my review. He goes, Urban Style Don Rickles. And he goes, Mr. Rickles, this is Earl David Reed. And he puts his paper down. He goes, hey, how you doing? Oh, my God, he's black. He goes, he says, no, I just kid you. So he goes up and he gives me a hug. And then after we break the hug, he's patting himself down, checking for his wallet. Never stops.
That guy was something else. He was on a whole other planet. The timing is amazing with Rickles.
If you ever want to make yourself laugh, folks, and you can't get to the club right now, or you can't Google some of the cool. And that's the other thing, too. Look at the lineup of the people that come to the Carlson. You Google them. Do your homework before you come to the show and check them out. They're all really good. If you get tired of doing that, then you can go on there and check out some old Johnny Carson clips when Don Rickles was on Johnny Carson. And that'll just tickle you.
Yeah.
Because it was long before people had to say the right thing. He's on one of these shows with on the couch with Denzel Washington. And oh, my God.
Okay, I'm going to go back and watch it. I watched one like a week or two ago when I needed a little pick-me-up, and it was Burt Reynolds was on the couch next to him. And
yeah, that
Burt
good.
Reynolds was wearing like a red, I don't know what you call it, like a onesie? Like it was just this yeah. weird 70s-style garden
like
suit.
Like a jumpsuit, yeah.
Yeah, and Don just ruined him. It's amazing. Like the guy who is the sex symbol of the 70s to women all over the world, Don Rickles, is just sitting there mocking him openly. It's pretty incredible. That guy was the best. So, all right, Earl, we'll see you soon, my friend. Thanks for watching, everybody, to this episode of... Hold on, let me pop into my screen. Thanks for watching. We'll see you very soon. You'll be surprised. We got a cool guest coming for the rest of this week. So act right, wash your hands, and don't be a jerk. We'll talk to you soon, Rochester.